This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
An interview that I've been looking forward to all summer, speaking of the summer, is upon us, and I am absolutely thrilled to welcome into the studio UVA astronomer Ed Murphy. Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon.
How's your summer been going? What have you been doing?
Very busy. I taught a class at UVA, taught a workshop for teachers, and I'm off to another workshop for teachers on Monday.
Goodness gracious.
Yeah.
It's so much for the summer.
Exactly. It's actually the busiest time of the year.
Yeah, it sounds like it. And now when fall comes around, how many classes do you have and what do you teach?
This year I'll be teaching two classes in the fall. Plus we teach a class for the public on Tuesday evenings, and we'll be teaching a class for Jill on Thursday. So I'll actually be teaching four classes.
And Jill
altogether.
Is?
The Joint Jefferson Institute for Lifelong Learning.
Oh, okay. All right. And remind folks again how they can get involved with the Friends of the Observatory and what that is.
The Friends of the Observatory are just people who support the education and outreach programs that we do, things such as the teacher workshops that we run over the summer where we bring in 25 teachers to learn all about astronomy, because in many cases a lot of teachers haven't had an astronomy class in college, and some of them haven't had astronomy since they were in elementary school. So we try and teach them everything they need to know about astronomy before to help them in the classroom. And those are the kinds of outreach programs, our public night program, and they can go to the astronomy department webpage to find out about this membership group that can support our education programs.
And you get those folks into the observatory to look at really cool stuff.
That's right.
In the evenings.
We have special nights for the Friends of the Observatory. We have run special events for them so that they can get a more personal look at things in the sky.
And there's two observatories here, right? There's the one on McCormick, right?
That's right.
Right near the university, the old traditional historical.
A historic observatory. McCormick Observatory.
There's also one down in Cove Garden, right?
Or Coveville.
Yeah.
Yeah, 13 miles south of town is our research observatory. There's just too much light pollution in Charlottesville. We can't do research from McCormick Observatory anymore.
Yeah.
So all that research is carried out at Fan Mountain.
And Allison and I used to rent a little farmhouse down on Cove Garden Road in North Garden. And you could walk out, we would walk out with the dogs in the field, and you could look up at Fan Mountain and see, on a clear day, you could see the observatory.
Yeah.
And it sort of looked like, the mad scientist castle up there, you know. That's where they do all the work.
it's where we do our local research. And then we have observatories all over the world that we're partners in the desert southwest, in the Atacama Desert of Chile, for example, and Mauna Kea in Hawaii. Our astronomers will travel all over the world to use the really big telescopes.
Wow, fascinating stuff. Ed Murphy from the UVA Astronomy Department graciously agreed to come in today. And I do want to thank you, because all of the sounds of space that we are going to hear today, you put together for us. And thank you so much,
because
this clearly took a great deal of time to sort of scavenge them up. And these are not unique to you. We want to thank all the folks who put them out on the internet so that you could find them.
Yeah, that's right. It's important to know that I didn't make any of these sound files. I found them all on the internet. And what we'll do today is interpret what they are, but I don't want to take credit for creating them.
Right, right. Now, before we start to listen to the sounds, Ed, let's talk about the very idea of listening to sounds from space, because space is a vacuum. There is no sound in space, and yet we're talking about space sounds.
That's right. What we're going to listen to today mostly are radio waves that have been converted into sound waves that we can hear with our ears. Sound wave comes from the compression of air. My vocal cords squeeze the air and release it and squeeze it and release it. And as they squeeze and release the air, it travels out of my mouth. And then when it hits your eardrum, that squeezed and released air vibrates your eardrum, which creates a signal that you interpret as sound. But that's not what we're mostly going to be listening to today. The waves that we get from space are mostly radio waves. They're picked up by giant radio telescopes. In some cases, and only in a few rare cases, can they actually be interpreted as sound. Most of the time, they just sound like meaningless static.
And the radio waves, put them into perspective on the spectrum here. They're much longer than the sound waves and light waves. Is that right?
They're actually two completely different things. Sound waves are the compression of air, the compressing and releasing of air, whereas electromagnetic waves, radio waves, are actually a form of electricity and magnetism, electric fields and magnetic fields that are traveling through space. So they're two completely different things. In any case, in any wave, you can always talk about the size of the wave, the wavelength. Radio waves are different than light only because their waves are much longer. Visible light that we can see with our eyes has a very short wavelength. Radio waves have a really long wavelength. And that's the only difference between radio waves and visible light. Otherwise, they're exactly the same.
UVA astronomer Ed Murphy. And so let's talk about how these sounds are then, how these radio waves on the electromagnetic spectrum, is that right?
Yep.
That are out there in space, how we actually convert them into the things we're going to hear.
So what they do is they use a giant radio telescope oftentimes to pick up these radio waves, to concentrate them on a receiver that then amplifies the radio waves. And in most science experiments will actually go into a computer and be analyzed by the astronomers. In some rare cases, we know that these radio waves, if we take them out of the computer, they can be converted into sound waves, and they sound interesting as sound waves. So some people have converted them into sound files, which they've placed on the internet.
But it's important to note, if you get in the space shuttle and you drive to Mars or whatever, you go out into space, you will never hear what we're going to hear.
No, that's right. You never would.
You won't hear anything.
No, exactly. Yes. There's the famous quote from the movie Alien that in space no one can hear you scream. And it's true. There's the gas between the planets, the gas between the stars is so thin that it doesn't carry sound waves that you could hear.
Right. And it also, so when you see the Death Star explode in Star Wars, it wouldn't explode. It wouldn't...
No. No,
you're not
right.
Going to hear... There's no sound to it, and there wouldn't be a lot of fire either.
Exactly right. It would be silent. It would be completely silent. And that doesn't make a good movie.
That would be boring in the movie.
That's right.
Well, let's start listening to the sounds. Now, I noticed that you have organized them into different categories.
Yeah, so the first category are sounds from deep space, things that are far away from us. And then the second category were sounds from near Earth. And then the last category of sounds were sounds of man's exploration of space.
Okay, so this first thing here, let's play it first, and then you'll tell us what we've heard.
Okay.
There it is.
So that's the sound of a spacecraft crossing the bow shock of Saturn. So to explain what that is, the sun is giving off a constant wind of particles that are typically traveling many hundreds of miles per second.
Because the sun itself is shooting through space, right?
It's the particles are coming off the surface of the sun primarily because it's hot. There's the surface of the sun is active, and the particles can get thrown off that way.
Yeah. But just to clarify, the sun, because a lot of people think, and you certainly learn in grade school, the sun sets in space and the planets go around it.
Yes.
Well, in fact, the sun is moving through space, right?
That's right. It's orbiting around the center of our
galaxy. And we're corkscrewing around it.
Yes.
Through space.
Exactly.
So as it goes through space... things sort of fly off of it as
yes.
it moves.
Yeah, regardless of whether it's moving or not, it would be emitting a wind of particles. All stars do. It's called the solar wind of particles that are coming off the sun.
Okay.
So, and this particle, these charged particles travel through space until they collide with a planet, or in this case, collide with the magnetic field around a planet. Now, we've launched the Cassini mission to Saturn. It was launched in October of 1997, and it arrived in 2004 at Saturn. And as it passed through the magnetic field of Saturn, it could hear the wind from the sun suddenly coming to a stop as it rammed up against the magnetic field of Saturn.
Wow, let's listen to that again. The wind from the sun, like hitting Saturn's windshield.
Exactly. That's exactly right. The bug splat on the windshield.
That's amazing. All right. This second one here, I think this is right. This is a sound captured radio waves.
Yes.
Captured and converted to sound, captured by the Voyager spacecraft. Remind
yes.
us again what Voyager is.
So Voyager is a series of two satellites, Voyager 1 and Voyager 2, that were launched in 1977 to study the outer solar system. This one that we're going to listen to, Voyager 1, is the most distant spacecraft we've ever launched. It's more than 100 times further from the sun than we are. And just like the wind comes crashing up against Saturn that we heard a second ago, this wind from the sun eventually gets far enough from the sun that it hits the gas between the stars and comes to a halt. Now, it's much weaker out there, so it's a much fainter sound. But this is the sound of the solar wind stopping, coming to a halt when it reaches the interstellar medium.
So this is Voyager leaving the solar system.
Exactly. And so it'll be a much subtler sound than it was with Saturn, where you hear the sort of crash as the particles come to a rest. But this is the sound of, for the first time in the history of humanity, we've left the solar system.
Oh. let's play that one more time because it's a bit cryptic.
So those little bursts of sounds yeah. are energetic particles that have come to a halt that Voyager is running through as it passes out of the solar system.
Wow. UVA astronomer Ed Murphy is my guest, and we're listening to the sounds of space. What's up next here?
The next one is, again, sounds of Saturn. These are more sounds that are created by charged particles that are trapped in Saturn's magnetic field. They're responsible for creating an aurora on Saturn.
I hope I have the right thing right here, because I think sounds of Saturn, number three. Let's make sure we have the right one. Let's listen to it. You tell me if it's the right one. This is it. Okay. Now, what is that again?
So those are charged particles that are trapped in Saturn's magnetic field, and as they spiral around the magnetic field lines, they give off radio waves, and those radio waves have been converted into sound waves that we can try and interpret.
Wow. And what picked up that again?
Cassini,
right?
The spacecraft.
Where is Cassini now?
It's in orbit around Saturn right now. Has been since 2004.
Listening, taking pictures, doing all that?
Exactly.
Stuff?
So there's a number of scientific instruments on board. The most famous thing, of course, is the camera that's taken all the spectacular pictures of Saturn. But there's an instrument for detecting dust particles that we'll hear here in a few minutes. And this one is the radio and plasma wave experiment that picks up radio waves and emissions from plasma charged particles.
Okay. Now, here is another clip of radio waves converted to sound captured by Cassini passing through the rings of Saturn. And remind us again what the rings of Saturn are, because when I was a kid, I thought you could get on a bicycle and ride around on the rings of Saturn.
No, yeah.
But evidently that's not the case.
No, the rings of Saturn are made up of little tiny particles, anywhere from the size of much smaller than a grain of sand, little tiny dust particles, all the way up to boulder-sized things. The typical particles anywhere from a few centimeters across to maybe 10 or 20 centimeters across.
Okay.
But as Cassini
came... So a bunch of rocks.
A billion, trillions, really,
yeah.
of small little particles of dust. So and from our distance, they look solid, but in reality, they're all... Each individual particle is orbiting around Saturn.
And do we think that they were once part of Saturn and then blown out, or are they like a destroyed moon?
They're probably a destroyed moon. Probably a moon around Saturn that collided with something else and was completely blown apart in the process, and it's now too close to Saturn for its gravity to bring it back together. The tides of Saturn are so strong that they prevent gravity from pulling it together.
Yeah, and Saturn has a bunch of moons, doesn't it, already?
Yeah, 60, I think, was the most recent number announced just the other day. As you listen to this one, this is a particle detector on Cassini that, as it went into orbit around Saturn, it had to pass through the outer part of the rings, and you'll hear what sounds like rain falling. And you'll hear the rain get more and more intense as it passes through the rings, and then it goes behind Saturn. As it comes out the other side, it has to pass through the rings again. So each one of the little pits that you'll hear is a particle striking the spacecraft.
Is part of the ring of Saturn.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's listen.
Hear it fall off as it goes out of the rings.
And now it comes. Now it's coming back in.
Here's the outgoing going ring plane crossing.
And that's literally bits and pieces of the rings of Saturn hitting Cassini.
Yes, exactly.
Wow.
At many miles per second. So Cassini had to be specially designed to survive that ring passage. And its orbit has been designed since then. They had to pass through the rings when they went into orbit. But since then, they've tried to do all the ring crossings as far away from Saturn as they can. But that one time, they had to go through the outer part of the rings. They had no choice.
Because it could damage the spacecraft,
absolutely,
right?
Yeah. It would just take one large particle striking the spacecraft.
And go right through it.
Exactly. Completely have ended the mission.
Wow. Okay. We're talking with Ed Murphy, UVA astronomer, about the sounds of space. And let's play this next one. Do you want to set this up, or should we just listen to it?
We can listen to it.
Okay.
It's should sound familiar to people. It's the sound that lightning makes that you hear on a radio, except this is lightning on Saturn, as heard by the Cassini spacecraft, and not lightning on Earth.
But oh, my gosh.
This weekend, if we get...
I was going to say, that does sound familiar. It sounds like WINA on some days.
That's right. No, it does. If we have a thunderstorm, you'll hear on your AM radio that popping and crackling. And that's because lightning is made up of charged particles. They give off radio waves when a lightning strikes. That's what you hear on your radio. And this is just lightning that Cassini's picking up on Saturn.
Lightning on Saturn.
In the atmosphere of Saturn.
And, of course, just to remind folks, Saturn is a gas planet.
It's a gas giant.
Like Jupiter.
That's right.
So if there's a glass of water big enough, it would float. It's not. There's no land to it.
That's right. That's right. You could start at the top of Saturn and parachute all the way down to the bottom. You'd never land on a solid surface.
But there's still lightning going on inside of it.
Absolutely, yep.
That's the lightning on Saturn. We're talking with UVA astronomer Ed Murphy, and we want to take a break here at the bottom of the hour for a little local news and weather and find out if we got any lightning of our own headed our way. Ed, this is terrific.
Oh, good.
I'm just having a ball. And we got a whole bunch more, folks, for you coming up. Lots of more sounds, from deep space sounds, pulsars, sounds from Earth, sounds of exploration. We're going to get to all of them in the next half hour after this break. This is Charlottesville Right Now. This is Charlottesville Right Now. Let's continue our discussion with UVA astronomer Ed Murphy. We were talking during the break about life beyond Earth. So you are going to come back this fall, and we'll talk about that subject because that's something you teach.
That's right.
Understanding it, how to look for it, what do we know, what do we don't know.
And the implications of it.
Right, right. So we'll definitely do that show. Let's return to the sounds of space, and up next is something called the auroral emission from Saturn. What is that?
This is, again, charged particles trapped in Saturn's magnetic field as they oscillate back and forth, as they spiral around. They give off radio waves that have been converted into sound waves.
So particles, like what kind of particles?
These are electrons and protons, negatively charged electrons and positively charged protons, wind from the sun that gets trapped in Saturn's magnetic field.
This is the creepy one. You know, Ed, if you were trying to make creepy music,
yeah,
this is what you'd make, and yet this is a totally natural phenomenon.
That's right.
Over there on Saturn.
Yes, and in fact, the Earth gives off exactly the same kind of radio waves because we have charged particles from the sun interacting with our magnetic field, creating an aurora here on Earth, and the Earth's aurora would sound very similar.
Wow, this is amazing. Move on, because we want to make sure we have time for all of them, that the auroral emissions of Saturn. The next thing, explain to us when we talk about the pulsations of the sun. Now, we've heard about the, what is it, every 11 years the sun does something?
The sun has a solar cycle. Its magnetic cycle gets stronger and weaker with a period of 11 years. And in fact, it's a 22-year cycle where the north and the south poles of these fields switch with one another. But the sun is a big ball of gas. And if you think about the Earth for a second, if you have an earthquake on the Earth, it causes part of the Earth to vibrate. And those vibrations pass through the Earth, and they cause the whole surface of the Earth to vibrate back and forth. The same thing is true with the sun. Events on the surface of the sun can cause the whole sun to vibrate back and forth. This time, we're not
like
listening.
A big bowl of jelly kind of thing?
Exactly, like a big bowl of jelly vibrating. And in fact, if you watch how a big bowl of jelly vibrates, you can figure out what's going on deep down inside the bowl of jello by watching how the surface is vibrating. And we can use these vibrations of the sun to monitor what's going on deep down inside the sun, which we can't see.
Yeah.
And this is one of the few sounds where we're actually listening to a true sound waves. These are motions of gas on the surface of the sun moving up and down.
So these are not radio waves that have been converted into sound.
Right.
This is actual sound waves from the sun.
Exactly. Yep, the pulsations of the sun as the surface moves up and down and up and down.
And isn't there something that we sent to the sun, some kind of spacecraft?
Nothing that studied it very close. We had a spacecraft called Genesis that went about 1,000,000 miles from Earth and collected particles from the sun and brought those back to Earth.
Okay.
But we've never really studied the sun up close.
Yeah. Are there plans to do that? Is there a team working on something like that?
Not right now.
Yeah. I guess you can do a lot of research from here. Yeah,
exactly. Most of the solar research can be done from Earth.
It can. Okay. Let's listen to, these are actual sound waves emitted by our sun, our nearest star. And I have it looped because we only have a little snippet of it, so this is actually a loop you're listening
to. That's right.
And this is like that bowl of jelly. The sun is sort of going... Wah, 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 wah.
Exactly. That's exactly right.
And it does this constantly?
All the time. And we have a series of optical telescopes set up around the world that monitor this 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, because, again, using these oscillations up and down as these sound waves travel through the sun, they allow us to determine what's going on deep down inside the sun. It is, in fact, I should mention, exactly how we know what's down at the center of the Earth. We've never drilled down to the center of the Earth. We don't know what's down there, except that earthquakes create sound waves like this that start the Earth vibrating, and as we watch those vibrations pass through the Earth, we can figure out what's down at the center of the Earth.
Yeah, it's the same idea. It's a bowl of jelly made out of a lot of rock.
Yes, exactly.
That's also vibrating and moving and
That's
shaking.
That's right, and the sun vibrates much, because it's larger, vibrates much more slowly than the Earth does during an earthquake. An earthquake, as we all know, the vibrations are much higher frequency. Yeah. They're much faster. The sun is a much slower pulsation.
And the pulsations on the sun tell us what about what's happening inside it?
It tells us the structure of the interior of the sun. It tells us the temperature and the density and the pressure, ultimately, of all the different layers of the sun going down to the center.
And because those are sound waves, we can't hear them here on Earth, or can we?
No, we can't hear them. What we actually detect is the motion of the surface as these sound waves propagate through the sun. We see the surface of the sun moving up and down and up and down in response to these sound waves. And with our optical telescopes, we can actually sense this up and down motion.
Wow. Ed Murphy, UVA astronomer, is my guest. And if you can't tell, I'm sort of blown away. I just love this stuff. Let's talk about pulsars. And first, tell us what pulsars are, because I know this is a particular favorite topic of yours.
Yeah.
What are we talking about when we say pulsars?
Pulsars are dead stars. It's what's left over when a massive star blows itself up at the end of its life. I mean, a good example is on July 4th in the year 1054, a star in the constellation that we know as Taurus blew itself apart in a titanic explosion. It was visible in the daytime sky for weeks. It was visible in the nighttime sky for a year. These are some of the brightest things that appear in our night sky. And what's left over is something that's typically about the mass of our sun, maybe 1.5 times the mass of our sun. And the gravity is so strong that all that material, instead of being 1 million miles across like our sun, is crammed into a ball that's just a little bit bigger than Charlottesville. It's typically 10 kilometers, or about 6 miles in radius, about 12 miles in diameter.
Ed, what makes it blow up? What makes it come to an end?
It runs out of fuel, is the basic answer. Stars survive by fusing hydrogen into helium, and eventually they're going to run out of hydrogen. And for a while, they can fuse helium into carbon, and carbon into oxygen, into neon, into magnesium, on up the periodic table till it gets to iron. But once you have a big ball of iron, there are no more fusion reactions that can sustain a star, and the center collapses. And that's what makes the neutron star, the pulsar that we're about to hear. But as it collapses, all the energy it releases blows the star apart in about 2 seconds.
And it sort of falls in on itself and starts to spin. And you were telling me earlier it's sort of like a when you watch the Olympics or you watch the figure skater. Tell me what...
So when you watch an ice skater and she has her arms out, she's spinning slowly. And as she pulls her arms in, she spins faster and faster. Our sun right now is spinning about once a month, but if we took it and shrunk it down until it was only 12 miles in diameter, it would be spinning much, much faster. So pulsars are spinning anywhere from once a second or so up to pulsars that, as we'll hear here in a second, are spinning many hundreds of times per second.
And the reason, the sound waves that we get from these pulsars, they can only emit as one part of the sun spins around and looks
That's
towards
right.
the Earth, right?
So the radio waves come from charged particles at the north and the south magnetic pole of the pulsar, and it's not aligned with the rotation axis of the pulsar. It's very much like a lighthouse, how you only see the lighthouse when the light sweeps past you. In this case, as these things spin, the cone of radio emission that's coming out sweeps past us, and we hear it pulse on. And then as the cones finishes sweeping past us, it pulses off, and then it pulses on and off and on and off. And what you'll hear is the clicking of a pulsar pulsing on and off.
Just like we would see a lighthouse if it was spinning around
exactly.
quickly, you'd see flashes.
Exactly.
But in this case, we're hearing the flashes.
Yeah. So the first one is a fairly normal pulsar that spins about once every 1.4 times per second.
Is the sound of the radio waves being emitted from a dead star far out in space.
That's right. So each little tick you hear is as that cone of radio emission sweeps past the Earth, you can hear the pulsar turn on, and then it quickly turns off as that pulse is carried on.
It sounds like the killer in an Alfred Hitchcock movie going up the stairs to get the heroin, you know?
Yeah. Well, you know, an interesting thing about these, when they were first discovered in 1967, the pulsing was so regular that no one, at first they thought that, they named the first object LGM-1, which stood for Little Green Men 1, because they thought it was from an intelligent civilization.
They thought they'd found it.
Yeah, because the pulsing was so regular, it was almost as if a clock was going off. And then they quickly found a few more and realized that it must be a fairly common natural phenomenon. And then they discovered the true reason are these spinning dead stars.
Yeah. All right. Now, here's another pulsar.
So, yeah, about 10,000 years ago in the southern constellation of Vela, a supernova exploded. A massive star blew itself up. And so this is what's left over now, this star. And this particular one spinning about 11 times per second.
And it just goes on and on like this.
Yeah, yeah.
For how long?
These pulsars gradually slow down over millions of years because they are losing energy as they spin. But the slowdown can be measured with radio telescopes and precise instruments.
When they run out of energy, is that when they turn into a black hole?
No. It will always be a neutron star. It will always be this ball of neutrons that's about 12 miles across. As they spin slower and slower, they give off less radio waves. One of the reasons they're giving off copious amounts of radio waves is their rapid spin.
Yeah, yeah. But this is not how you make a black hole.
No. Black holes are made in the same way when massive stars die. In the case of a neutron star, the core, a pulsar like this, the core wasn't big enough, it wasn't massive enough to collapse into a black hole. If the mass is bigger than about three times the mass of our sun, there's nothing that can hold it up against the force of gravity, and it collapses into a black hole.
Ed Murphy is an astronomer at the University of Virginia, and we're talking about the sounds of space. The next is the Crab Pulsar.
Right, and this is the one that exploded on July 4th in the year 1054. We know the exact date because Chinese astronomers would keep meticulous records about what they would see in the night sky. Now, this one's spinning about 30 times per second.
If you just joined us, there's nothing wrong with your radio. It's the Crab Pulsar.
I'd like to stop and think about what that is. That's something that's the mass of our sun crammed into a ball just 12 miles across, spinning 30 times every second.
That's amazing. All right, now here's a pulsar for you. This is something.
Yeah, this is the second fastest pulsar known.
It's spinning so fast, it's just static.
That's right. You can hear that tone, which is the individual pulses. Now, your ear can't pick out the individual pulses. You just hear that tone. Yeah. This is 716 times a second.
Wow. And where is this?
This one's, I don't know what constellation it's in, actually, up the top of my head.
But it's out there somewhere.
That's right. And the surface of that one is spinning at about 1/7 the speed of light.
We're going to have to move a little bit quicker through these. This is the sound of the Big Bang, and tell us how to win the world would we have. Obviously a simulation, right?
That's right. This is a simulation that's actually made by a University of Virginia astronomer, Mark Whittle, who's interested in the Big Bang and is interested in the acoustics of the Big Bang. And so the Big Bang is the origin event, the expansion that created our universe. And early on in the Big Bang, as material starts pulling itself together, the gas, as gravity starts pulling things together, it sets up pressure waves or sound waves in the universe, which is the compression and the rarefaction of gas. And so what you'll hear, this is the sound that he created, the model of the Big Bang.
There you go.
So the first thing you'll hear is that it's mostly high frequencies at first, and then it comes down to low frequencies. As the universe gets larger, bigger portions of space can start collapsing.
And what's happening when it's getting louder?
And as it's getting louder, that's when the universe is becoming transparent. So the universe early on was opaque. That is, the gas in the universe and the light were sort of mated together because the light would keep scattering off the particles, the gas. But the light and the gas separate from one another a little less than 300,000 years after the Big Bang, and as they go their separate ways, the gas can then collapse, and that's why the noise gets louder over time.
There you go. the Big Bang. UVA astronomer Ed Murphy is my guest, and we're talking about the sounds of space. Let us now turn, if we can, to talk about some of the sounds, not from deep space, but from right here our neighborhood.
That's right. These are sounds that are made by the Earth. This first one is very familiar to people. This is exactly the sound that lightning makes, and that's what this is.
Oh, yeah, I hear this. Listen to WINA.
Yeah, that's right.
And that's lightning in the atmosphere getting mixed up with the radio waves that are going into my radio.
It's just lightning is releasing radio waves, and your radio can't distinguish the ones that WINA is intentionally broadcasting and those that the lightning is giving off. So you hear that pop and crack. It just picks up the radio waves from the lightning.
Oh, wow. All right. So that's lightning. Let's talk about something called tweaks.
That's right. So tweaks are when these pulses from lightning actually travel through the Earth's ionosphere. The different waves that have different frequencies travel at different speeds. So this is lightning is heard from possibly 10,000 miles away, and the high frequencies travel faster than the low frequencies. And so you hear that high-pitched pop, and then it gradually goes down to lower frequencies as those lower frequencies take longer to get here.
Is this, if we had people on, say, Mars, this is might be what they're hearing coming off of Earth.
Most of these radio waves are actually trapped around the Earth, so they wouldn't hear something like this.
Okay.
So
let's talk about whistlers.
So whistlers are these things heard from even further away, and now you'll hear there's a very long delay between when the high frequency gets to us and the low frequency.
And this, again, is what?
It's lightning. Again, heard from around the world, from the opposite side of the world.
Lightning that's traveling not, say, just over Albemarle County as it comes down, but that's as it's up in the atmosphere.
Well, it's the light.
Really long distances.
It's the lightning strike makes radio waves, and those radio waves travel really long distances.
And this is going on all the time, right?
This is going on all the time. These are called whistlers, and this is something very common. You can pick up, actually, on a shortwave radio.
And it's not something that just happens at a certain time of day. It's always happening.
It's always happening because there are always lightning storms somewhere on Earth.
And now here's some more whistlers, but not from Earth.
Yeah, these are whistlers on Jupiter that were picked up by the Voyager spacecraft.
Radio waves from Jupiter.
Exactly.
Wow. and this is what? This is the Leonid.
The Leonid meteor shower. When a meteor hits the Earth's upper atmosphere, radio waves can bounce off of it, off the ionized trail that it leaves behind. And so you'll hear the pings, the very loud noise as it's reflecting the radio waves.
Expect Rod Serling to step out, you know.
That's right.
With his cigarette and submitted for your approval.
That's right.
The Leonid meteor shower. So the lightning happens on Earth. It creates a radio wave after it strikes. The radio waves just takes off.
That's right.
And sometimes it bounces into a meteor.
Oh, these actually can come from even radio stations. One of the very popular ways to listen to meteor showers is to actually tune in an FM station that you normally can't hear. And as one of these meteors shoots through the atmosphere, the radio waves from that station will bounce off the trail that the meteor leaves behind and come down to your radio. So suddenly you'll hear the radio station and it will gradually fade. And then when another meteor comes through, the radio station will get loud again and gradually fade.
That's really something.
Yeah.
Let's see if we can. We've got a couple of minutes left. So on this last list of things regarding exploration, what would you like to listen to?
I guess the
obvious one.
The first one is
which got it all started.
That's right.
Now here's a sound that scared a nation.
That's right. Absolutely.
What was that?
So that's the sound of Sputnik. That was recorded just 2 days after Sputnik launched. It launched on October 5th, 1957. And Sputnik carried a small radio transmitter on board, and that was the radio signal that Sputnik was sending off. And again, people with ham radio equipment here in the United States could listen to this beeping.
And they played that for folks, and it just scared people half to
death. Absolutely, because the Soviets at the time had beaten the United States to launch the first satellite into space.
We have time for one more. Should we do the Explorer 1?
Sure. This is the United States' first satellite that was launched.
answer to Sputnik.
Exactly.
And you can see pictures of it on the internet. It's just like, it looks like kids made a rocket in high school.
That's right. Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's
just, it was 1957.
Yeah, so. I mean, it's just this thing looks like somebody made it in a garage.
Yeah, but you can actually hear in that the signal that Explorer sent off was much more complicated than the one that Sputnik sent off, because we had scientific instruments on board, and it was that satellite that discovered the Van Allen radiation belts around the Earth.
Wow. Ed Murphy is an astronomer at the University of Virginia. I'm always so impressed with what is between your ears, man. I tell you, you are a brilliant guy, and I can't tell you how much I appreciate you coming in. Thank you so much.
Sure, thank you.
We're going to take a break here at the top of the hour for CBS News, local news, and weather, and we're back with Best Seat in the House. You folks have a great night.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SeavillePodcast.com for more.